Hello and welcome to the Human Innovation Podcast, the podcast for innovative leaders. I'm your host, Jens Heitland, and today my guest is Jeff Dolan. Jeff is the CEO of Wave, a cloud-based platform that helps podcasters and other audio creators keep marketing on social media simple. He's a podcaster, musician, and award-winning filmmaker who loves to encourage creators of all stripes. Jeff and I have a fascinating conversation, starting with AI, talking about filmmaking, and we as well look into how startups and leaders can use podcasts, creating their brands and as well supporting their businesses to grow. We talk as well a lot about content creation and of course how you market yourself and your business. Fascinating conversation, and highly recommend to listen to the end because there are awesome topics in it. Please welcome to the show, Jeff Dolan. Hey, Jeff, it's awesome to have you. And we need to talk about surfing later, but let's keep our conversation from before we started recording flowing. We talked about AI and the development in that direction. I'm testing this chatbot where we just try to use a couple of AI topics as well. Are you applying anything of that?
Yeah, I'm still exploring like a lot of people. I think there's, like we were joking, there's like the overnight gurus that are all out there trying to teach you exactly how to do everything because they figured it out, which I think is, some of it is very valid because they're one step ahead. They spent many more hours doing it, researching it, reading it than a lot of people. But yeah, the possibilities are endless. We were talking earlier about training an AI with all of your content to where they have these pick your brain services where you call gurus on the phone and ask them a bunch of questions around a niche subject. Now you can just train your AI and your AI can talk to them however long they want. Yeah, it's going to be crazy. I think the point that content creation has gotten to now is very interesting because the rate of change in the world and what is working versus not working is changing so rapidly that you almost have to be careful how far ahead you schedule content because the world could be totally different by the time that content comes out. It might not be relevant enough. And the interesting thing about OpenAI is that it starts, I think, 2021 and previous, right?
Yeah.
So it doesn't have the recency of, for some tools now that are letting it like search the web for news and things like that. But there's still that latency there where it's pulling from knowledge bases that you're not sure is totally relevant right now. So we're in this strange learning phase where how much are you trusting AI? I think almost the perfect balance is AI gets it started for you and then you as an expert finish it. And then if you really want to get on the cutting edge of it, you're telling people about skills that are working right now and are very relevant to what's going on at the moment.
Yeah. And like we discussed before the recording as well, fascinating with Sam Altman talking to Lex on the podcast where he was, they discussed this notion of, hey, it's still a tool. It's not a person. So we need to still be aware. Like I think even Steve Jobs was saying that way back that IT and all these things is still tools and we should not keep them as humans. And I think the lines are blurring a little bit when you see that there are people who are using it for chat possibilities where you're lonely and you need a friend to talk to and this it works that you get answers. So I'm right now, like I said, I'm testing this audio version of a leadership guide. And I'm calling it the name of my daughter. So I'm teaching it in a way that hey, you're a female from a name perspective, at least, and you are supporting startup founders in this way. So I'm discussing with it. I'm trying to keep it conversational as well to see how do I use questions and answers from a leadership perspective that I bring my content as part of that as well. It's so fascinating.
Yeah. And we personify things all the time.
Yeah.
Pet rocks. Pets, things that can't really have a real conversation with you, but we impose a bunch of personality and characteristics of humans onto. And so I think it's totally possible to do that. What's that movie, Her, where he falls in love with the AI? I think that's totally possible. And it is blurry. You look at what just came out with Elon Musk with the robots walking around. It's going to be very difficult if you've got an animatronic robot that looks like a human that's having a real conversation with you, and the latency is not there, and it's real time, yeah. And it's going to get super hard. What's the movie, the new 2000, or what's the Harrison Ford came back to do it? Blade Runner.
Yeah.
So the newest Blade Runner, he has a relationship with the AI. It's a total clone copy. Everyone has the same copy of it, but he's training his AI that knows him, and he has a connection to it, right? Because that AI is educated on him. And so I could definitely see a future where you train an AI, it knows all your sayings, your mannerisms, your stories, right? And your family can continue to come back and talk to it. Almost remember the old Superman movies where he's got the crystals,
yeah.
And to go talk to his dad, he like puts in different crystals and has this conversation. That was very futuristic.
Possible.
That's possible now. It was not possible back then, but now it's okay. That is totally possible.
Yeah. When I left the corporate world, I first time ever discovered Gary Vee in 2020. Which is hilarious. A lot of people laughed about me, but I still figure out that people even don't know him yet. So he's one of the marketeers out there who is really out there. And one of the things he was saying at that time was audio will be the future. And he was saying, I'm recording everything and transcribe it so that when I have all of this, you can ask Alexa and all this assistants in the future anything about me. And I think that's already possible if we take the AI component as part of this. You have all your content, and his content is massive, all stored somewhere, and the AI can use it as a learning bed. You can basically copy paste him into the internet with a chatbot, whatever, in the future. And I guess if you then go then in film, like with Joe Rogan, I don't know if you've seen the videos or the podcast episode where he was talking to Steve Jobs, I think.
Yeah.
This, and it's fairly good already.
Right.
And it's early.
Oh, yeah. Totally. Yeah. And I think that's the interesting part, too, where we're, as content creators, we are trying to wrestle with the idea that we are just creating content now for the AIs.
Yeah.
And so the question is, are you going to be one of the artist styles that people choose? I want to create content as Jens.
That would be fun.
Are you going to be a personality that they're going to mention or want to consult? Because you're going to be feeding the algorithm. And so the question is, do you put guardrails on that and guard that? And do you license your likeness? Because the other side of this is on the artist side. You're basically giving all these AIs all your content and your likeness. That guy that created the AI Joe Rogan podcast, he just straight up used Joe Rogan's content, created his own content, his own conversation. It's all based off the assets and the fame and notoriety that Joe Rogan has created across his career. So it's, if you monetize that in any way, does the original artist get to take a part in that? And that's why the NFT boom was so big, was because it was the first time artists realized, hold on, we can create a situation, much like the music industry with licensing, that we can create a little commission override that says, okay, you can use it, but pay some back to me as the artist. And so I think all these things are converging. And at some point, the law and the government is going to have to catch up to it, because it's just moving so fast. And traditional governments and legal, you know, systems just can't comprehend all the new technology that's coming out. And at some point, the technology will get easy enough for the mass majority of people to use, and it'll come to a head where everyone will say, okay, hopefully everyone will agree that, okay, this is a good model to help people use your likeness, license your likeness, and not feel as an artist that you're just feeding this machine and not getting anything back from it.
Yeah, it's fascinating where this will go. I'm really curious. I'm just trying to be in that wave, just one part because I'm an innovator and I want to find out how this works. And I'm more from a perspective, right now I can't do anything against it, so let's figure it out. I will try to do my best to at least get a little bit piece of the pie in the future. But yeah. Yeah, it's very hard.
And as a software company, I think it's scary too, because the old saying used to be that software would eat the world, and now AI is going to eat all software. And that's, they simplified the interface to that chat interface, which is universally understood. People understand what a chat interface is. They don't have to learn buttons or where things are or hidden menus or drop down anything. It's just have a conversation, right? Just like you interface with another person. And so they made the software interface the exact same as talking to another person, which is brilliant, which is why it caught on faster than all software in the history of software. And so once you have that interface, all the AI companies are like, great, we're going to just make it a part of our software. But there's one catch to that, and that's then you commoditize everything. And the joke amongst the VC world is, so you're basically just using ChatGPT's API. Great.
Yeah, that's, for me, it's always a difficult one, because you built a dependency as well. What if ChatGPT is saying no or double the price or whatever, then your business might struggle in the future. So if you just rely on this only, that's why I'm eager to test as well the Google Bard version, which unfortunately, in at least as of the day of the recording, is not possible to reach in Europe, because it's isolated.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah. It's not available in any European country. I guess it's because of the data protection rules and so on.
Yeah, GDPR.
Yeah. I would love to test it and see what's going on. And I think then a couple of others are working on it as well. I've seen a post today from Meta as well, where they're looking at it and are now a little bit more verbal. And then I guess the Amazons, they're working on it behind the scenes as well. So there are a lot of different models in the future, which we can use in different ways. And it's good to have more versions than just one.
Right. Technically, if you're a developer or software-minded person, you could take one step back a little bit and actually go to the models, the big, what are they called? The language LLMs.
Yeah, language learning.
The learning models that these things are based off. And you can go back and go to the GitHub repositories and kind of start from where the researcher stopped and just build on top of it. So you can go a layer back and then start training it yourself to fork it, if you will, into a different version that you have. And I think that's what we were talking about before, where the value is going to be in the specialist that is taking it and making it a tool for a specific niche or specific use. Hey, we've trained this thing to do this specifically, and that's our spin on it. But yeah, to your point, you would have to build from the base model and then train it up. It's just so much easier to take an API that somebody's already actively developing, like Sam in OpenAI, where we're rapidly going so fast that you can't even keep up with it if you started from scratch on your own model. So yeah, there is a risk to that. And I also think the risk comes in too from a, I guess, to use a made up word, a truthiness of it. How truthful do you want it to be, and to which people?
Yeah.
Once the neutrality goes out the window with a certain creator of it who's training it, then it's, hold on, I didn't want to go in that direction. I wanted to go in this direction. So that's why you see all these different versions of it, where they're naming it instead of ChatGPT, it's like TruthGPT or like whatever other one that people are cooking up. Or the funniest one I saw was, I forget the name of it, but it was like a cynical GPT, where it like sasses you. It like talks back to you. Have you seen this?
No, I haven't.
So it's like rude to you.
Yeah.
Pretty fun.
It's interesting where will be the guardrails as part of the legislation in the future as well. Like, what is allowed to do free speech, all these discussions. Yeah, the difficult thing if we talk about governments and politics, just a little bit on that one, I think it's difficult, and we have been laughing about that yesterday. Sam Altman was interviewed by some politicians, and they're far away from getting it. And we have seen it with Meta and the other ones as well. I think they have a little catch up to play everywhere in the whole world.
For sure. For sure. Yeah. Think about it. They're a generation older than all these guys, right?
That's
They're a generation older than us. They, it's very hard to learn all these new tricks and even keep up. Just think about just to do your job, right, in any government, and then to keep up with all the young kids that are just innovating like crazy on stuff. Yeah. It's super hard. But yeah, we were joking because Sam Altman was like, yeah, I don't get paid. I do this for fun. And then the congressman was just like, what?
Yeah. Let's go a little bit more into your world. So I have a couple of topics which I would love to explore. Let me see where we... Let's start with, who is Carter?
Who is Carter?
Yes. From your YouTube channel.
Interesting. Yeah, my buddy, I met him in college at UNC Chapel Hill. Good friend of mine. And we have always been buddies growing up and bouncing ideas off each other. We've always liked content creation and filming. We've filmed all over the world together. And he is a funny guy. He's just funny. And I've always encouraged him, like, you are a natural for creating content. Like, you need to have a channel or something.
Yeah.
And he's got so many different interests. Like a lot of us as artists, we are multi-hyphenated. We do a million different things. We want to be everything for everybody. We've got talent, multi-talented. We can do this, we can do that, da, da. But nobody really cares. It's just be real, be yourself, be available, share your content, share your personality, and be yourself. And that's hard to do in the content creation game. It's very hard to do because once you put on the lights, once you put on the camera, once you put the mic on,
a different person, something wrong.
So I was talking to him and I invited him to help us out at the Wave Conference to exhibit and be there. Not the Wave Conference. What am I saying? The Craft and Commerce Conference in Idaho with ConvertKit. So I invited him to come out to that and help us at the Wave booth. And we were talking and I was like, what's stopping you? Let me help you. Help me help you. We created this show that was like, hey, let's get on every week as accountability, public accountability. Let's jump on and let's talk about growing our channel together. And so that's what we did. And yeah, then we knew that the looming thing that was going to derail everything was that he was about to become a dad. And so I had already gone through that journey and I was like, man, you have no idea what's about to happen. You think you're busy now? Wait, just wait. And so we sure enough came to the point where he had his son and it was like all hands on deck. And then a lot of stuff happened in his life and in his wife's life and just all these things happened in his family. And so he literally was like, you were right and plus. And so we got to just hit pause on this. And so we did. And I actually, it's funny enough, we're recording this week. So Monday, I'm going to do the final wrap-up episode and see where he is and catch up on the story. So stay tuned for that. But it's been a fun little journey with him.
Tell us a little bit more about the 6 months to 6,000 part. So what are you exploring and how do you explain it? I watched like a couple of the videos just as a prep for the podcast. And I think it's super fascinating for a lot of people that want to start a YouTube channel or want to start any channel. I think it works as well when you start with your small startup, when you start with the small business to, hey, let's do a social media channel. How do we get started? Give us a little bit more details about how you do that and what's the content.
Yeah, absolutely. So this is, like you said, it's a common struggle where it's almost like the 0 to 1 concept. Like I think Peter Thiel had a book on it, but basically how do you go from, I just started a channel on whatever platform and we chose YouTube. But like, how do you choose a channel? And then how do you get any followers whatsoever? It's like super daunting. So we chose 6,000 just because that was like a snappy and meaningful number. And 6 months seemed like a reasonable time for most people. I think when you get online and you see all these gurus talking about, we can get you to 1 million overnight. Yeah. You're just like,
I get that every day.
You're lying. Like just whatever. You did that one time somehow, and you're not going to tell me until I pay you $1 million. So we wanted to just grow organically, authentically in public, starting from zero. And it was just like, I think we both had our initial story where we had a little bit of success doing something, right? Like I think he was following one of the treasure hunts that this guy buried treasure and had this story about how you could go find it. And there was all these mysteries and you had to read into this book. And there was all these treasure hunters all over the world trying to find his treasure. It was really cool. So he was part of that. And he got some followers off that because he was talking about it all the time and how he's trying to find the treasure. And then I was a filmmaker, and I am a filmmaker. And in my first film, I just posted the film after all the film festivals. And so after it won and everything was done and all the rights were, I was like, okay, just put it on YouTube. And it did pretty well for what it is. It's a short sci-fi short film. And it was pretty prophetic when it came out, because a lot of people were like, hey, how did you know that we were going to be talking about this in 5 years after your film? Cause it's about a lot of like biotech type of concepts. But that gave me the initial little couple hundred followers. And then it was like, okay, how do I grow from there? And I said, I'm going to start creating content about how do you grow a channel? It's the default way to grow on any new platform, right? Not that YouTube is new, but a lot of people are like, hey, there's a new platform. How do I grow on it? So it was super humbling to just go from a couple hundred followers and be like, yay, I got one more follower this week. And it was my aunt who I told to follow me. And it's so true though, because I follow a lot of people that they have no followers, right? Like you go to their channel. Like I just saw this one the other day. My buddy sent me this link. I don't know how he found it. I guarantee you probably YouTube just suggested it, but I think he literally had 600 followers. And this guy had amazing content. Wow. Like top quality. I was like, man, this guy probably has 100,000 followers on. And I went up to his channel and it said 600 and I had to like double take on it. I'm like, what? But this is what's happening. This is reality now. You can start easily, but it's super hard to grow.
It takes Why? Time. Yeah.
Because there's so much good content now. There's so much content. And then the AI is just helping people do it better, faster, quicker, smarter. And then everybody has access to all these tools. And they learned during COVID how to do things like what we're doing here, like recording. Yes. And you mean I can just have a conversation and create content and I can put that out? Like, amazing. So yeah, it's getting harder and it's getting very hard to grow. And so what are the tactics? What are the skills? You really have to roll up your sleeves and learn. You have to learn the tactics on how to not only create content, which I think is a generic term really, because it assumes that all content is a commodity. Like I'm just making rice and all rice is the same and it just tastes all the kernel and all the little the little grains of rice are all the same and I'm just going to create a bunch of rice and put it out and everybody's going to love it and it's all going to taste the same. That's not how content is. Every little thing you put out is a different flavor. It reaches different people. It has different topics. It speaks to people differently. It hits emotionally different. It lands in a timeline to a specific set of people that are going to react to it in a specific way. And then it's going to go bye-bye. And then maybe it'll resurface if the algorithm determines that someone else would benefit from that based off the data of the original post. So you have to learn all these things about how these platforms treat your content. How do you describe that content? And then as you get smarter, that's why I always encourage people start on one platform because you have to learn that platform and grow your audience. And then you can tell your audience, hey, follow me to all the other platforms. So it's so funny to me how you can hear these gurus or whoever out there that says, it's so easy to grow. Even Mr. Beast, right, had a commercial. I think it was Shopify or something where he's like, it's so easy to start your store. You just start it and look, overnight, I'm getting all these orders. It's so easy. Of course. Bro.
You have 130 or around 130 million followers on YouTube. Yeah. No problem.
No, so easy. And it's the same thing if you build a following. So if you have a following either on your email list, you did it on YouTube or Twitter or any of the platforms, right? You built Instagram, you built up a big following, and then you're like, you know what? I'm going to start a Telegram or I'm going to start a Snapchat or whatever platform you're going to move to. You just tell everybody, hey, I'm going over there now. And then they follow you because you have a real following. Yeah. If you don't have a following, if you do that and nobody shows up over there on the new platform, then you know who your real people that are paying attention are. And that's humbling because you might have a situation, and I didn't get here with Carter in the journey, But in the next phase of the journey, after you get the initial little bit of followers, you mm-hmm. have to start moving into creating some sort of service or some sort of product to help people do something, right? Whether it's paid or you're doing it on a one-on-one basis, however you're mm-hmm. doing it consulting-wise or services-wise or product-wise, you have to move to a point where you're helping people and they're being drawn into your community. And then you start creating a community and you start talking about your products, whether it's a, maybe you can even do an affiliate, right? If you don't want to create products, but you're like, hey, I want to promote these good products that are in line with what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
And so you start creating this community, you're helping people, you're at that next level. And then that kind of flywheel effect starts happening where there's something to be attracted to and you start building out the network and growing. And if you don't do that, yes, you can. And there's different ways to look at it. Some people say, create your content first and then monetize it. And that's fine. I think that's smart. That's right on. Yeah. But what happens when you can't figure out how to grow your audience first? That tells you that you're probably not on the, in my rice analogy, it's just too plain, man. the rice ain't good enough. Like, you got to change it up. I 100%
agree. Because let's just jump quickly to Mr. Beast. He was just, I think he just had birthday and he was posting his statistics of his life on YouTube. He started with 7,000 views per year, which is nothing compared to today. But yeah. It's 12 years journey as well.
Right.
So that's what a lot of people don't see as well, because you're not good when you just get started, when you have your own channel. I just started a new channel for my startup. I have 25 followers as a day of this recording. It's growing a little bit faster than maybe my first channel, but it's still nothing.
Yep.
And one of the things I'm playing right now, just to geek out a little bit, is YouTube Shorts. That's massively. I've had on my podcast channel, I've had a couple of thousand views with one, and that spills over to all the old content. That's always the interesting, like the tail end strategy, where yes, you have one peak somewhere and still everything goes up, which is quite interesting to see.
Yeah. And that concept is actually really important. There's a concept that you just want to put volume out, right? You just want to just throw everything at the wall, see what sticks. But there's another philosophy that says, put out your best stuff. Because here's the concept that is interesting to me as an artist.
Yeah.
If I hear a song on Spotify or somewhere, and or I hear it on the radio and I find out who is this artist, what's the first thing I do? I want to listen to more of what I just heard. So I go and I look at the back discography or the catalog of this artist and I go listen to his other songs. Yeah. What happens when I find a really good video on YouTube? I click through the video and I see all the other videos and I see if I like any of the other topics and I listen to another one. Oh, I want to hear that. I subscribe, right? So I think the backlog concept is a very important one to realize that when, as you get more popular, more and more people are going to go back to your back catalog and listen to it and watch it. So your views will go up on all your past content as you get more popular. So it's a building thing that happens, not linearly like we think, where it's just like, nope, the new video that goes viral, then every video after that will go up and all these videos will still be nothing. You'll start to see a lift effect on all your content if it's good. Now, if you went to the concept of, I just know I'm bad, I'm just going to put out all my bad content, get it all out of my system. Now you need to employ the concept of pruning, right? Where as you get more popular, some of your less good content gets deleted and magically disappears and you only promote your good stuff.
I still keep all that shit in.
Yeah.
So with my first channel, which is the podcast channel, now it's 99.9% the podcast only, which was not really favored in the old times of YouTube, but now it is, but with the new setup and YouTube going into podcasting as well, and which, so it's growing, the views are growing, it's the retention and so on is different than it was before. But just having a normal podcast episode like us right now talking to each other, is not everyone listens to podcasts or watches podcasts. Most of the time, it's still like we discussed before as well, while driving a car or while right. commuting to somewhere, and then it's just audio, you don't watch it. So it's, I still have all the old stuff in, which is just funny. I don't do this for gaining followers. I'm just doing it for myself, because one of the reasons, at least for me, is I've seen it with my dad. He did radio a bit, and it's just fascinating. He died a couple of years back. I can still listen to it. I listen right. to him talking, and I just want to have a huge library for my daughter when she's maybe 16. I hope I'm still there. when she's 40,
right,
which is in 36 years, then I hope there is something which he can listen to and say, oh, my dad was not funny, but he has had interesting conversation. They talked about ChatGPT and so on. So that's just, for me, is one thing to explore as well. Like,
absolutely,
how do I react to things? And now the other one is, my other channel is a little bit more strategic because it's the channel of the startup. But yeah, it works a little different.
Yep. Yeah, we all have our different reasons for doing the content. And I think we all have to find our why in that, because if we're only looking at our follower count as the reason to continue, it's going to be really hard.
And that's even what, in the podcast interview with Mr. Beast, he was even saying that it doesn't matter. It's easy to say if you have 130 million.
I've talked to guys like Sam Parr of My First Million podcast, and he even admits that the hardest channel to grow is podcasting.
Yeah, it is. And it takes time.
Yeah.
Joe Rogan was saying it. I think he has had almost 1,000 episodes already out before it took off. 1,000 episodes. I'm at 200 something published, 222, I think.
Which is huge. Congrats.
It's already big for a podcast, but it. Just comparing this to Joe Rogan is far away, not just from the listeners and the quality and so on.
And it's, if you also look at it, even if you're looking at it like you're doing it for yourself, but maybe also looking at it like a learning experience.
Yeah.
You're basically learning out loud, right?
Exactly.
You're learning in public, and you're saying, hey, I'm doing this to get better. And you just know that you're using all the latest techniques. You're mixing it up with the latest and greatest thoughts and leaders in the industry. You're going to get better. You're going to make contacts. You're going to get a community going at some point. Just keep going. I think a lot of people have this mindset of, if I don't make it by next month and have 1 million followers, like, I'm not meant to do this. I'm going to quit. Okay. <It's, laughs> I guess we won't see you.
especially with podcasts. If you take the first 10 podcasts, except you have already a huge following, which you drag in, it's your family and friends listen. And if you're lucky, it's your family and friends. In my case, they don't speak English properly, so they don't listen. Nobody of my buddies and my family's listened to it, which is always funny.
That's an interesting. Yeah, it's true. When I won this award with Red Bull, and I went to Portugal and I met people all over the world. And I met this one girl who had to apologize to me because she's like, yeah, I'm coming out with my YouTube channel, but it's not in English, so you won't be able to understand anything I say. And I tried so hard to like still listen to it and try to translate it. And I just, at some point I was like, it's too hard. I can't keep up.
Tell us a little bit about Phase 6. So how did you, which is the film where you were in the, what was this, the top 10 of the Red Bull?
Yeah, it was very interesting competition. So they had a worldwide competition to find the best sci-fi filmmakers because they were partnered with a European think tank called Future.io. And Future.io is a really great group of artists and leaders and innovators that inspire businesses to think differently about the future and desirable futures. Mm-hmm. And so they realized that the future a lot of times mimics sci-fi films, right? Whatever comes out. We were just talking about Superman, right? Where he has his crystals and he puts them in and he's talking to his father. That was basically an AI of his father that was trained in all his father's wisdom that he could just tap at any moment. What kind of desirable sci-fi filmmaker ideas and concepts can we bring? And so what they did is they created this huge kind of meeting of the minds in Europe, in Portugal, where they brought all these big thinkers and innovators and futurists from all over, and then brought in us as filmmakers to share what is our desirable vision of the future. And so we had to do like this TED Talk. We had our films, we had our premiere, they rolled out the red carpet. It was super amazing. And we got to learn from the guys that chose films at South by Southwest and Cannes Film Festival and all these different films, and really give us storytelling and networking. And it was just an amazing time to really just hear all these great ideas and what the future could look like. And I didn't even know what a futurist was like when I went there, and they were like, you definitely are.
Like, oh, cool. But how did you get into this? So did you hear about it? Did someone nudge you to say, hey, you should go there, you should apply for it? How did you end up?
Yeah, so I was working at Tech Mountain on the coast here in North Carolina. So I was working at a startup, and I had premiered my film, and they were like, you should really think about entering this Red Bull competition because you're forward thinking, you're innovative, you're right in line with this, and you need to apply. And so I applied thinking it's just like another film premiere thing that when you go on the festival circuit with your short film, it's really tough to go anywhere beyond a short film, because a short film in the film world is like a business card. It's just like, here's my style, here's what I can do, the work.
Yeah.
But it's not a film full length, so you can't sell it or do anything with it. And so it's very hard to do anything. So the festival circuit for a short film filmmaker is basically just, like, hey guys, here's what I did. It's fun. It maybe opens some doors, make some connections, but it's not really, hey, I'm going to go make a living at this. Yeah. So I got in, I applied, and I won, and it was cool. So once you got picked, they picked like 20 people to go to Portugal. Then they had a second competition to win. So after you do your TED talk and you're not TED itself, but like the style of talk, you have a certain amount of minutes to present your ideas. Then they had this second competition there at the conference, at the event, where the winner of that got the Red Bull film team to film their idea, which is super cool.
Yeah.
And I didn't win that, but the guy that did, his concept was in the future, you would be able to transfer energy to other people. And so they did a film on that, which is really cool. So yeah. And the Red Bull film team is amazing. We got to meet them when we went over there, and wow, they were great.
I was just watching your short film, which is called Phase 6. I will put the link into the show notes for everyone to have a look at it. It's amazing. I will not spoil the story, but the story with Jade and Jess, and I was completely dragged into, and it's, what is it, 12 minutes?
Yeah.
It's super good.
Thank you, man. I appreciate it. Yeah.
Really good.
It's funny looking back now, because I went too ambitious on my first film. Like, I was like, oh my gosh. Like, then I was always joking, like, the next film I do is going to be a 2-person romantic comedy in one location. Because it's just, when you do an indie film, you realize that you don't have a big budget, so you can't get it done in a compressed amount of time, which is why big budget films, you can basically get everybody together at one point, just knock it all out and shoot it all, and everybody's isolated and that's all they're doing. They're not like flying away, like doing other things. And so, but when you're doing an indie film, you're like, oh, 3 people can't make it today, I guess we can't shoot. And so I had like 30 people on set. Every job was essential. Like, everyone had to be there doing their job. And there's so many crazy stories. Like, one time the sound guy showed up drunk and he wasn't hitting the record button. Just crazy stories. One time we rented out this restaurant. We're doing the scene in the restaurant. One of the extras, little boys, were in the bathroom painting the walls white with paint they found underneath the counter. Oh my goodness. There's so many stories. But yeah. And then after that film came out, I started having kids. And I was just talking to a stunt coordinator yesterday, actually. And yeah, we were like comparing notes about how hard it is when your life changes and you don't have the time anymore to just go do films.
Yeah.
And so I think eventually I will be gathering people and resources for my next film. And I can't wait. It's going to be fun. There's some I'm talking to some people about maybe doing like a sci-fi fantasy kind of deal. Mm. But again, I'm like still going back to the romantic, just two people and some drama. Just but, keep it easy, man. I just want to put something out. I don't want to have to spend 5 years of my life making it.
But like you said, the business card is there and it's on your YouTube channel. I think it's definitely worth checking out for some film people.
Thank you. Well. Thank you.
It's appreciate really it. Good. So let's lead us. Let's use that a little bit to how did you get to being a CEO? Like you're a filmmaker, you're doing these things, you're working in marketing, you work even in medical stuff, which we haven't talked about. And you're surfing, obviously. So let's start with how do surfing and being a CEO of a startup link together? And what did you learn from surfing, which you can apply as a startup CEO?
Interesting. Yes, I've always grown up around the beach. My dad was in the military. He was a Marine pilot. And we moved all over all the time. I was always moving. Holding down friends was really hard because you'd get to meet great friends and then you'd say, bye, I got to move somewhere. And so it was really tough growing up to just not have any solid foundation or friends. And so by the time we got to high school, my dad sacrificed for the family and said, hey, I want to keep us here on the coast of North Carolina. And that really helped us to have some stability, especially through high school. I think that's a crucial time to not say bye to all your friends and start over at the bottom somewhere. But yeah, I always love the water. I always love like the mountains, like snowboarding and stuff too. California probably would have been a better place to surf and snowboard in the same day, but I'm an East Coast boy, so that's what we did. And then I always wanted to be a CEO. I always knew that one day I would probably try to start my own company or lead a company. And I was just being very patient, right? Very patient in corporate America, just doing my job, learning as much as I could. I knew that one of the scariest, hardest things to do in business is sales. And so when I was graduating college at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill, I was even talking to my friends that were graduating ahead of me a couple of years and they were getting into sales. And I was like, what are you guys thinking? Like, how boring? How, like, why would you do that? And this was during the time where it was right after the dot-com boom, right? Like the dot-com boom was full effect. Everybody had friends that were like, yeah, I put dot-com on it and they're giving me $1 million. I'm going to fly out to San Francisco. It's amazing. I'm like, oh my God. I was just a little too young, like a little too naive. Like I didn't quite understand what was going on. But yeah, friends were just crushing it, going out, making all this money. And then I graduated and had already crashed. So I was like, great. This is amazing. Like friends that were graduating with me were like going into the Peace Corps and like going back to get their master's degree. Like they're doing anything but trying to get a job. And that just wasn't my style. And I was like, okay, what are the things you need as a CEO to know how to do? And sales was one of the skills where you absolutely needed to know how to sell yourself and your products. You need to know how to sell. You needed that skill set. And if you're running a company and you have salespeople on the team, you need to have their trust and you need to have street cred. It's like trying to be a general and you've never shot a gun in your life. And I always, growing up, had seen these CEOs and I'm like, I don't know if I could respect a CEO that couldn't sell anything. Like, how do they even, you can't become a CEO and not know how to sell. So I was like, all right, I'm going to bite the bullet and do the hardest thing first. And I'm just going to go into sales. And sure enough, what do companies need in a recession?
Sales.
Salespeople.
Definitely. Yeah.
So if you are young and hungry and want to make money and you think we're going into a depression or a recession, brush up on your sales skills. So that's what I did. And so that whole concept, I'd been in sales or business development, selling software, medical software, my whole career, and just being very patient. And my friends had been watching me and going on a different path where they were starting their own companies. Eventually, some of them created their own private equity firm. And they saw me join one of these companies and triple it in revenue. And they were like, hey, we want you to come run one of our companies and do that. And it was one of the things where, as a personal value of mine, like I want to make sure that I'm enjoying what I'm doing and enjoying life. Cause I think there's a balance between doing something you hate to just make money to then one day do something you like. No, just 4-hour work week it, right? Figure out what you enjoy now and make that happen and then expand from there. And so they said, hey, we know you like podcasting. We know you're creative. We know you like software. What if we buy, and we know you like marketing and sales. Like, why, what if we bought this company? Would you run it for us? And of course I was like, that sounds amazing. Like, first time CEO, let's see what I got. Let's put me to the test here. Let's plug that junk in. Let's go. Yeah. So that's, I got that opportunity and it was a really cool thing. And so that's where I'm at right now. Just learning and growing and figuring out the content game, just like everybody else is with the AI and everything. So yeah, it's been fun. It's been awesome. And I don't think I answered your question though on the surfing, how it relates. It relates because in surfing, you have to paddle to where the wave is crashing. A lot of people are passive. They're just like, I'm going to just sit here and just, if you do that in surfing, if you literally just sit there and want the waves to come to you, you're going to be sitting there all day long and you're going to watch everyone else catch their wave and crush it and do all the tricks and right. You have to actually paddle and what's called dig. You got to dig, you got to get to the wave. You got to get into it. You got to be in the right spot on the wave. You got to know what you're doing. You got to go down the line and then you have to flow with the wave. You have to feel the wave. You have to move with the wave as it's moving. It's an organic dance that you make, right? And that's just like in business. You have to go where the opportunity is. You have to figure out who needs what I can make for them. Find those people, go to where they are, serve them, and then adjust and listen to what they want, just as you're riding a wave.
Yeah. So. Love that. Yeah. And it's obviously, and we haven't geeked out about podcasting. Maybe we can dive a little bit into that because before we do that, explain a little bit what you do, what Wave is doing, the company Wave.
Yeah. So Wave is a tool for podcasters and audio creators to help them grow their influence on social media through turning their podcast or audio into video. So it's like you take your audio podcast and you put visuals with it. And then now we create videos for you to share on social media. So what we're really doing is taking the editing process and difficulty out of it. So if you don't want to sit there and take video and try to chop it up, you just take your audio, find highlight, and we create the visuals with it. And then we add waveform animations that match the audio, right? Mm-hmm. So the video is like creating animations that match your audio to create an eye-catching movement. So when people are scrolling, they see that there's something active happening there and it's interesting. And they're like, oh, let me listen to that. And then they're going to see the captions there. They're going to see the title. They're going to see, okay, this is a topic I'm interested in and something's happening here and I want to listen. And then they can go into kind of passive listening mode and listen to whatever the clip is. And if they like that clip, they might not do it in the first one. They might not do it in the seventh one, but eventually they're going to say, I got to go check out the whole thing of this. This conversation is interesting. I got to go listen more. And they're going to find you. They're going to subscribe to your podcast. They're going to get your full episodes. And now you might have earned a new listener. So we're really trying to help you grow your audience at Wave. And we're recently just released transcription. So full transcription of your podcast to be able to repurpose if you need to create a blog, a newsletter, descriptions for social posts. Putting the full transcription on your website under your podcast player, right? For SEO, all sorts of things like that, just to help podcasters the most to leverage what they're doing.
Yeah. What I love as well, what I've seen when I looked at your website and as well the YouTube channel, you educate a lot, which for me, this is it. For me, it's basic marketing, but it's so good when you start educating with the topics you do, and you're not an education company, it's just helping the audience, the people who are interested in podcasting. Hey, how do I do this? How do I do that? So they link to what you do as a company and then say, hey, they helped me with this. Maybe they can support me. So it's kind of a marketing selling opportunity, but it's not hard sales. It's just, hey, there's cool content which might help you to do things better without you paying for it. You just need to do it yourself.
And I think that goes into the know and trust paradigm where there's a lot of options out there right now. like, you don't have to use Wave. You don't have to use Adobe Premiere. You don't have to use any of these products that are out there. You choose to use them, and you choose to work with people and brands that you trust and that you like, right? And so we look at it as an honor if somebody chooses to use Wave, because we know they can go wherever they want at any moment. There's no long-term contract, right? It's, I definitely think that's the way to look at it as a company, is who are you trying to serve, and are you serving them with education, with encouragement? Are you inspiring them to get to where they want to be as a creator? Because there's so many options out there. And if we can help somebody along the way, then they're gonna roll with our community. And what I hope to do this year is create a community, right? In the app, like, just have it where we show up and teach people live. Here's what we're doing. What are you doing? What's working for you? What do you need right now? What can we build you? So to really create that community, I think, is the next step beyond just teaching like we're doing now.
Yeah, very cool. Let's talk about podcasting. So you have, if I have seen right, you're running three podcasts yourself, or co-running three podcasts, or did at least in the past.
Yeah. There's my personal podcast. I did run at my last company. I helped start their podcast, which is Tax Pro Nation. And then, then the current Wave podcast.
Yeah. Did they all came naturally to you? Let's start with your personal podcast. Did you start this to explore? What was the purpose you started that?
Yeah, the original one was just to document my journey as a filmmaker and just start podcasting. It's funny because back in the day when I was in Nashville, I got the Canon 5D Mark II, and I thought it was the best thing ever in the world because it was like the first DSLR that did film. And I was like, oh my goodness, 1080p. It's like amazing. And at the time, that was like 2006 to 2008 was the first boom of podcasting, like the first, like V1. It was like, this is it. Podcasting is amazing. But I was like still on the filmmaking kick where I was like, oh no, I got to learn how to do all this DSLR, like crazy stuff. And so I started blogging back when a lot of people were starting a podcast. And so I feel like I was following it and listening to it, but I felt like I was part of the podcasting community, but I wasn't really doing it. I was blogging. And so years and years later, I was like, I need to just start doing this. So I need to just do this as a podcast. And so I started doing the podcast and then just experimenting. It's just one of those things where some of it is just me monologuing. Some of it is interview. I'm still working that out. I think that's my playpen, if you will, of what's interesting to me right now. When I went to the Craft and Commerce conference last year and then to one of the major podcasts, what's it called? One of the big podcast conferences, the talk was the transfer to YouTube. And so all the podcasters were like, what are we now? Are we YouTubers now? Are YouTubers now podcasters? Is everyone a podcaster? Yeah, pretty much if you're creating audio. It's just a distribution point now. And I created some of the content that was for video first that also could be a podcast as well. And I realized quickly that as a podcaster who has video tied to it, it's actually a different editing process. I don't know if you've realized that too. Like in audio only world, you can actually move entire sections of the conversation that happened at different times to make the actual podcast sound like more cohesive and make more sense. Especially if you like come back to a conversation that you started originally to finish it, you can take that, put it with that first part and make it sound like coherent. Whereas on video, I might have shifted in my chair. I might have taken my hat to the side. I might have done something different. My mic is in a different spot. And then where you cut it on video, it's like really disjointed. Wait, why is he sitting like that now? I don't understand how this happened, or right? And so the video component really constricts you as far as your freedom of editing. So I've been really understanding the difference of how you can use both. And you really, I think the audio only podcasters, it's an art in and of itself just to focus on that. And whereas I think if you're trying to double it as a video YouTube kind of podcast, it's another art.
Yeah. For me, one of the reasons I did video from episode number one on was the distribution opportunities and creating video clips on top of the audio clips, just because I've seen the movement. I started in 2020 of what's going on with videos in Instagram, for example, at that time.
Right.
And there's, okay, I will just try. It still was very bad, but that's how it is when you get started. Let's use that to talk about podcasting. So I have quite a few listeners who are building businesses, who are entrepreneurs and startup founders, for example. Why should a company, like you do as well with Wave, have a company podcast, something where they focus on different things than you do as a person, as the CEO of the company?
Yeah, I think this is important because it gets into the niching. I think a lot of people have problems when they're doing a kind of a personal podcast that they can't niche down. It's really hard to use your name or even a concept that you call it where you can niche down enough to where a listener is, okay, I'm going to listen to this. And at the end of this, I'm going to take something away. In other words, you're in a utility mode versus I just want to be entertained for an hour. I'm just going to laugh. Like the purpose of this is I'm just going to laugh for an hour. I'm going to just like enjoy this time that I'm hanging out with these people. So it's very hard to get into that entertainment mode. So most podcasts are going to fall into the utility mode. And if you're in the utility mode, you better be super niche. You better be teaching something that people care about and they're trying to learn something. And at the end of it, you better give them something that they can say, okay, that was worth my time. Yeah. And so most businesses are going to find it extremely hard to jump into that entertainment category, right? And so if that's Red Bull, they've figured it out, right? They can create the entertainment and they're a company that sells drinks. Like, great. Okay, that's super hard though to do. So to think you're going to just come out of the gates and you're going to have some amazing, emotionally powerful, entertaining, it's just hard. Okay, so if you're going to start somewhere, you're going to start in the utility branch, which means if you're getting away from your personal, which you can't even figure out what your niche is there, start a business podcast that's going to be strictly serving the people that you're already serving your business. So whatever those customer avatars are, whatever the demographics, psychographics, whoever those people are, their likes, values, goals, create content that's going to serve them, right? And then when they're attracted to that content, they find out, oh, you also make can openers? Cool.
Yeah.
I collect cans. Like, I need a can opener. Like, let me buy a can opener from you. That's really cool. So you're building on that know, like, trust concept where it's like, hey, I'm learning from you. I like you. I want to support what you're doing. So I'm going to buy the thing that's a commodity that you sell, right? Or I'm going to trust you as a coach or a consultant to help me do what you're talking about. You just trained me on that. How do I do this thing? I want you to implement it for me. So that's a really good way as starting a business. Like you're telling people how to do it. You're giving them 99% of the stuff. They're hiring you for the 1% or the 2% to actually implement what you're saying. Yeah. And so I think that's why it's important as a business to have a podcast or a YouTube channel or putting out content in general, because it gets you out of the trap or the difficult climb of trying to figure out as a personal brand. Also, when you have a personal brand, you can talk about way more things, right? So you're not just work mode all the time. You have other interests, other things that you do, and that's your platform to talk about that. And then there's a middle ground where you might have a lifestyle business where you are the business. And then it gets really muddy. Now it's okay. I'm trying to think of an example, but you are the business. You're the name, right? And you have your name on it and you are in a niche. And so you can probably get away with just having one podcast and talking about everything. I've seen some gurus I've followed them for 10 years and they've changed their business. They've changed everything like several times, right? They start off in one thing. They got this business. Oh, they sold that business. Okay, who cares? Now we're doing this other thing. Okay, now we're talking about something else. Oh, Web3. Oh, hey, NFTs. Oh, hey, now we're doing this. Oh, we're doing something else. And so you just fall in love with them as people. And you're just like, hey, I'm going to support you. You just wrote a book about something. Okay, cool. Oh, you have this product. Oh, you have this. You have a software company, whatever. And so that's cool because in that way, you don't look at it like your podcast is forever, right? Just like you said, like you started a podcast, you did this other thing. It's starting out with 25 followers. That's cool. You're going to start and stop things. But what you're really trying to do is create an ecosystem that people want to be a part of and lean in and be like, what is he going to do? What's next? It's almost like you're creating the grand drama of your life and you're living it on a stage and you're inviting other people along for the ride. And they're like, whoa, like you got all this stuff going on. Like, how can I? And then that's also why you see some of these platforms, they're creating this content as the cultural talking point or water cooler to just come to have these conversations. And then what's really cool is when you take it to the next level, I'm trying to remember this guy's name. He's in the real estate niche and he basically, the way he grows is he has his community built around his content and then they source deals for him.
That's cool.
So they're giving him real estate deals to grow his business and then they both win.
Yeah.
But they're incentivized to be like learning from him and then they're giving him deals. And it's just, it's a really cool dynamic that can happen, but he is the brand and he leverages the personal brand to sell all the businesses. And he has 10 different businesses now. So the other way to look at it is if your personal brand grows bigger than your business brand, in other words, your business podcast, it's okay to just close the business podcast and just be the face of it. I think the danger though, when a lot of people think about it that way is, okay, cool. You're a brand, you're a lifestyle, you're a personality. You are now jeopardizing your business a little bit because now if you sold that business off, it doesn't have any media tied to it. There's no media publishing part of it, right? Mm. So that's a tough thing. And it's also the argument that a lot of people talk about where Elon Musk is Tesla, right? And like if he left, it would struggle. And oh, I don't know, like his personality. Okay.
Yes and no. It's hard to
maybe,
say.
Maybe not.
Yeah. Maybe it would be better. You never know.
Right.
But I agree from a perspective of having this niche, which is, in your case, it's about podcasting. And the Wave podcast is about podcasting. It relates people. What I like about that, it's like you said, community building. That's one piece of it. The other part is you get a little bit of feeling of who is behind that company, because today everyone can be everything. But if you have a little bit more consistency and they see, oh, they're like 20, 50, whatever, growing episodes and they're still coming, that means there is something. There are people involved. It's not just a scam.
Right.
Which I think, especially in today's time where you can do a lot of things with AI, like we chatted in the beginning, this helps relate to people. And then it's, okay, they do something interesting. Maybe that's something for me as well, because they're producing valuable content.
That's such a good idea. You just prompted something in my mind. I just got to share this. Okay. So in crypto, there's something called proof of work.
Yeah.
You also have concepts called proof of identity, proof of stake, meaning you own a part of, you own coins in the network. So you have proof of that. But what you just said is, I think, a huge concept we can debut here on the show if no one else is going to coin this in the future. But it's proof of authenticity.
True.
So if you're a business and you're not creating content, we don't know the personality behind this business. How do we know to trust it? Is it going to be here tomorrow? What are you thinking? Are you going to rug us in the crypto world? To use crypto terminology, are you going to rug us? Are we going to trust you and then you're just going to leave? So I think that is a huge reason to be creating content as well, to your point. I think that's a great idea. Like, proof of authenticity is you as a business showing up and sharing what's going on in your world so that your customers trust you.
Yeah. And you can use that for, as a news channel, explaining a little bit what you do from a news perspective, but you can then as well do the educational piece like we discussed with YouTube channel. So yeah. I think it works in both ways. Or, I don't know, just brainstorming here, the employee of the month or whatever it is, if you have a bigger company where you interview someone who is only behind the scenes, but it's a fun person to talk to.
Right.
And would be awesome. So it's also if we think bigger, it's not just customer, it's also the people who want to work in that business, because it's going to be hard to get awesome talents in the future.
That's a great point.
Even for talents, I listened to a couple of podcasts with Jeff, and I was like, yeah, he's a nice guy. I would love to be in that company.
That's a great point too. Yeah, you can find people that are going to work for your company. You can interview customers. We had a whole season of Story on Tax Pro Nation podcast where all we did was interview our customers. Yeah. And I bet out of the, I don't know how many episodes that was, maybe 12 episodes. I bet out of all those episodes, we had half of them where we reached a point in the podcast where we were crying. It's hard to do.
Yeah.
That's hard to do. Tough. But they're telling their stories and they're raw. And it's, look, I'm a small business owner. I was trying to start my business. My wife died. Yeah. I had to figure out how to keep going or just curl up into a ball and cry myself to sleep every night. The stories are just insane, like what these people go through. Or like, I was starting a company. I put all my life savings into starting this company. And then the partner just scammed me, walked away, and I lost the business. And I had to Jerry Maguire all the clients and call them and try to get them to stay with me. It's just crazy stories. But every small business owner has those kind of stories.
Yeah.
Right? Imagine like all those stories, like you sharing them. And so I guess it's on you as a small business owner, learn this stuff, get a mic, get on YouTube, figure out how to do the technology. It's not an excuse anymore to not know how to do stuff. You got a YouTube away from knowing everything. You're an AI question away.
And to the earlier discussion, it don't need to be perfect. It's not comparable to your short film, which is awesome. But it doesn't matter, because the proof of authenticity, like you said, it's still there. Even if you don't have the best camera and if you don't have the best background, but you have an interesting conversation, it's fine.
100%.
And it don't 100%. Need to be in video.
That really is what moves you from utility to story, right? Yeah. That entertainment gap, that's where the forgiveness of the technicalities comes in. So the higher the value of story that you have, the higher the authenticity and what you're saying and communicating on an emotional level, the more forgiving your audience is to the technicalities of, did you pull off the right lighting or the right sound or the right mix or the right. If you look at Joe Rogan's first podcast, he's sitting there like fumbling around trying to figure out how to work his camera. It's just funny. He's like, am I doing this right?
Yeah. And I think that's an important one. And I think in your case, you do the podcast now, the Wave podcast, but you don't need to do it as the owner of the business. You can have like you have on the Wave YouTube channels, like one of your colleagues is doing almost all the videos and a couple of others as well. It's not you as the CEO who is in every video. So you can as well get creative people in your organization. Maybe you have already a marketer who would be awesome on a YouTube channel.
Yeah. 100%. Yeah. And there was many years where I worked in corporate America where they forbade the employees from making content. They were like, no, you can't make content. Only the CEO can make content.
That's BS.
But I think now you can look into your audience and you can, and I'm sorry, your staff, your employees, and see who's talented on camera. Give them a shot. There's some really talented people that are wanting to make content. That if you buy a camera for them and tell them the rules and set them loose, they'll make all sorts of great content for you.
Yeah. I have a cool example. I can't say the company. They have a couple of stores and two of their salespeople took over their YouTube channel. And they had one hit after the other because they just had fun doing it. But then it was a slightly bigger corporation. They said, no, we can't do this anymore. You're not allowed to do that.
Of course.
It was so hilarious what they did with the products and the videos, just really short stuff and just having fun.
Yeah.
Whereas if I would be the owner of this bigger company, I would say, hey guys, you do this 100% of your time because you're awesome doing it.
And they could literally, and this is why I started shifting in my career from sales only to marketing, digital marketing. Because I realized that the conversation is happening online and then they're deciding before they even talk to a salesperson. So a lot of the times the salesperson is just like, what a waste. What are you doing? You're not going to cold call somebody and convince them to buy. What are you even talking about? Yeah. That's not how it works anymore. So it's very interesting that a huge opportunity right now, if you're an entrepreneur, especially if you're younger and you understand how to do the social video and social media, there's so many people right now that are older that are retiring and selling their businesses. Do you know how you can buy these businesses and just put that publishing media arm on it and just crush it? There's so much opportunity right now to do that. If you're smart,
I should have done that. I tell you, because my first business, I've built everything and lost so much money. No, that's a learning. But I agree. Because even if you take very normal business, I was just talking yesterday with a friend, like a hair salon.
Yep.
Which is a one store or salon only. You could do so many things with social media, and they're doing zero.
Yeah.
There's so many things you could do with just being a little bit creative with
involving
all the different customers, even if it's the grandma from next door or whatever. Like you could have her interviewing her live while you do the cutting. It's like there's so many fun stuff you could do. I'm almost saying let's buy a business like that. It would just make fun to market it.
Absolutely. Even if you make it a destination, like if you have a physical store, how hard is it? I'm trying to remember, is it in California? There's like this wall where all these Instagrammers have to go in California to take a picture of themselves on this wall because it's pink and it's got this certain kind of style or whatever. And they're just like, everyone has to go there. How hard is it if you're a brick and mortar business to paint a wall outside your business so that people come as the destination? Oh, and by the way, we sell whatever.
True. 100%. I worked in one of the companies, which is a destination my whole life, or not my whole life, but plus 10 years.
Or what's the documentary about the sushi chef where you can only have five people that come in. He does the sushi and it's like the best sushi in the world. But the mystique around that guy, it's like, everyone wants to go there now.
Yeah, it's cool.
So if you're the hairstylist and you're just this one hairstylist in the middle of nowhere, but man, you chop hair with a big chopping blade and you put it on the block and you bop and then everybody's like, holy junk, what just happened? And you put that all on YouTube. People are going to be flocking to you. What is going on in this little town in the middle of nowhere? Like, I got to go find this lady and figure out how she chops my hair just right. It's amazing.
Yes, I think marketing-wise, there are so many opportunities. And looping us back to podcasting, I think, at least in my experience, I do this now a couple of years, and I'm saying I should have started 10 years ago.
Yeah.
So, because it's a learning curve. I've never done a video. I've never done any audio cutting. I've done zero before. So especially for you, it's slightly different. You come at least from the cutting. You have done a bit of that before, but you start blank and then it takes a while to get into a direction. And then you go and learn and get better and learn as well how to ask questions. How do you communicate in a different way? And even worse, like I do in not my native language, where you have a double hurdle sometimes because you talk different. But
and that's amazing, by the way. I think there's also a huge opportunity for those that are listening, and from a business standpoint, to create all different language of the same content.
Agree. I have never tried this because I suck talking in German. So I'm German originally. I can't do the same fun stuff in German anymore. It doesn't work. I can say the same things, but it doesn't work. It's not funny.
Oh, it's super interesting.
I like I said before we started recording, I do this leadership question of the day in the moment. I couldn't do that in German, but I should.
Yeah.
Because the market is so small that I could get quite a lot of attention there, because Germans in general are not the most funny people.
Yeah, for real. I think there's a huge opportunity for multiple language speakers to create content in those different languages native, because with the advent of transcription and then translation, you're seeing a lot of content creators like Mr. Beast who have different language channels and they're subtitling it. But I think AI is going to get to the point, and it already is at this point. It's just not evenly distributed yet, and it's not mass production ready.
Yeah.
Where they actually 3D map your face and your lips, and they, you do the translation, and then your lips actually speak in German, even though you were speaking in English, let's say, which is totally mind blowing. That technology is going to be available where literally you were saying it all in one language, and then you're all of a sudden saying it in another language, and you didn't do any extra recording or work. That's crazy, right? But it's, I think you're going to start seeing this technology come out. But I think from a authenticity standpoint, if you in your workflow can speak two languages or more, and you can say the same thing just one right after another in the same, especially if you are doing the snippets, like you're saying, you're doing the short little clips, it's a little bit easier to do that than maybe this conversation. But I heard a strategy the other day that was really interesting. She was saying that she recorded the podcast like we're doing now with video. She puts out an audio only podcast, and then she only shares the video as the clips. So she doesn't have to edit all this crazy, like the whole thing. It's just the video. And then when they go to listen, it's just the podcast. But we all find our ways to navigate the editing game. I'll also share this, which this is what I'm working on right now. I'm about to get off this call and do this. So they just came out with this AI editing tool. I don't know if you've heard about this or seen this.
I'm using one.
Are you?
Yeah.
Where it edits your video for you automatically?
Not automatically. I still need to do it myself. But it's, you can do a lot already. So it's, I can select, hey, take this words out, take this words out, take this words out, make the gaps between the words shorter. If there's a thinking, if you do too much, or you, for example, I've had a couple of guests who say, oh, that's an amazing question. If they say it too often, it sounds weird. So you can just type in these words and then it takes it out.
That's audio editing. I'm talking about
including video. It,
like this interview right here.
Yeah.
And it'll go through and edit the conversation where it's cutting to different things. Like I'm eager to try it and see how good it
too.
Is.
Me too. Awesome. Let's get us into the last part. We are already way over the time, which is good because I think we could do a couple of hours more.
We're going for 3 hours, baby. No, just
exactly. I'm not sure that my daughter is waiting for me already, because we agreed that we will do indoor camping at our roof part. So last part of the podcast is the part where I'm asking two questions, which I'm asking to every guest. If you could work with a project that is impacting every human being on Earth, what project would you choose to work with, and why would you choose to work with that project?
Wow. I would work with something that helps people build businesses. Because I think there's only two real things that you can chart your own path in the world, and to find your purpose, why you're here, and to create something of value for others, which the vehicle for that is usually some sort of business. So those are like the two skills I'd want to help people with, is like, why are you here? Where did you come from? Why are you here? And what are you here to do? What are you here to help people do? And so, it would be something along those lines for sure.
Cool. What advice would you give to a young innovator that's just getting started?
Solve trillion people problems, right? Solve problems at the largest level and think as big as you can. Because I think what I've learned, especially watching the big innovators in the world like Elon, if you reverse engineer what they're doing, they start at the top, like what are the biggest needs in our world? And then they go backward from there. Instead of what a lot of people do, which is like, how do I make money? Like, how do I do this one little thing? And then I'll figure out from there, and then I'll give, and then I'll do this stuff. No, like, how can you help the most people? Figure out the what first, not the how. I think that's what I would say.
Cool. I will put obviously all your social links and the video clip, or not clip, the link to your short film as well into the show notes. Is there any social media platform where you prefer people reaching out to you if someone is in the listeners who say, I would love to talk to Jeff?
Yeah, right now I'm active on YouTube, LinkedIn, really all of them. I'm even on some of the newer ones, but I think I'm very responsive. So if you want to reach out to me, I'm listening on all channels right now. So feel free to your social media of choice. I will probably respond. Now, will that happen in the future? If I get too much, probably not. But right now, my time is efficient and I can do that kind of thing.
Awesome. Super. Jeff, thank you very much for the great conversation. It was really a pleasure to have you on the show.
Thank you. It was amazing. Thank you so much.